And of course, there's my disclosure. I have no personal financial relationships. So I'd like to start by just telling you a little bit about Community Catalyst. We are a national healthcare advocacy organization that really focuses on building capacity for consumers and organizations to impact health policy. We currently work in about 44 states across the country. And we've recently really started, actually since I guess I've been on board about a year, really focusing also on bridging community-based organizations and national and state healthcare advocacy organizations to improve health. So we have several priorities organizationally, and I just kind of wanted to run through them very quickly so that you'll get a sense of the various things that we're working on. Like everybody else, we're working on the implementation of our newly passed healthcare reform law. We work on state health reform, not only in Massachusetts where we're based, but in other states around the country where we've got partners. Children's health, we also focus a lot on the chronically ill and dual eligible populations. Cost and quality, free care and community benefits. You know, a lot of folks are thinking, geez, we've got this wonderful healthcare reform law, so we don't have to focus as much on free care and community benefits. And many of you in the room know that that's not the case. So we continue to do a lot of work around community benefits. Oral health, and in particular, our oral health work follows the Alaskan model of dental health aides and dental health therapists. And so we're really working hard to make sure that that model is implemented across the country as well. Do a lot of work on prescription drugs and prescription drug access and safety. And then my specialty within the organization is racial and ethnic health equity. And like everybody else, this past year, we did a lot of work to make sure that the ACA, our healthcare reform law, was passed. And I just want to say that, you know, I think everybody in the room knows that that law has some wonderful strengths and some successes, but we also know that there were some disappointments in that law. And in particular, following the two previous presentations, one of the things that we were extremely disappointed about was the lack of inclusion and access for immigrant populations. And so we will continue to do work around that as an organization. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the health equity work at Community Catalyst. Although health equity is integrated into all of the program areas that I mentioned earlier, we also just do a lot of work that specifically focuses on health equity, and I'd like to share some of that work with you now. So there are several goals in our overarching goals in our health equity work. We want to strengthen the capacity of local and state advocates to be able to promote health equity in all communities, to really assist the folks working on the ground to understand what the provisions are in the ACA around health equity, and how we can really work to implement those provisions and make sure that they're implemented with lots of input from communities, so communities can really say, this is what we need and this is how we'd like to see this work. We do a lot of work to foster collaborations between traditional healthcare advocates, community health workers, and community-based organizations. And when I say traditional healthcare advocacy organizations, just about each state has at least one statewide healthcare advocacy organization that has done a lot of work in their states. But one of the things that I've noticed, particularly in my own home state, and I've noticed as I've done some work around the country, is that often these traditional healthcare advocacy organizations aren't partnering in the ways that I think they should be partnering with communities and community-based organizations. And so organizationally, we're doing a lot of work to assist those collaborative relationships to grow. I just talked about that. And we also work to do a lot of promotion of policy development on the local, state, and national level to reduce health disparities and promote equity in healthcare. And as all of you know, that's very broad. So we try to work on things that the folks in the states think are most important And then organizationally, we try to offer some of our capacity building expertise and some of the policy analysis to help groups on the ground be able to move forward. And then, of course, over this next year and many years to come, we'll be working with folks in the states and on the ground to implement healthcare reform. And it's really important for us organizationally to make sure that a lot of that work happens from the ground up and not from the top down. I just want to point out that community health workers have been part of the conversation at Community Catalyst even before I got there. Of course, the conversation is more robust now that they have a CHW on staff. But I just wanted to point out some of the things that that Community Catalyst has done to include community health workers. Early on, as efforts to pass the healthcare reform law were happening, Community Catalyst developed recommendations for ways to make sure that health equity is included and supported in the law. And part of that agenda, they included community health workers. And again, that was before I joined the organization. But they wanted folks to know how important community health workers are to promote health equity, improve health in communities, and the fact that we need to be supported financially to be able to do that. The organization also made recommendations to policymakers and legislators, again, reiterating the fact that community health workers need to be part of this solution, that you need to engage communities. I'm going to talk a little bit more in a minute about some regional health equity convenings that we hosted. But as we hosted those, we made sure that community health workers were part of those conversations and no longer an afterthought. And then really working hard to build a strong community voice to impact change in healthcare policy and healthcare delivery. And that that strong voice needs to include community health workers. So now I want to talk a little bit more about the regional health equity convenings that I hosted over this past year. And there were several goals when we brought folks together. We wanted to foster strategic alliances. You know, as I said earlier, oftentimes the statewide healthcare advocacy organizations may not be connecting with folks who are really doing the work on the ground. And those folks may not be connecting with state offices of minority health. And those folks may not be connecting with primary care associations. But the bottom line is we all need to come together if we're really going to talk about promoting health equity and improving health status. So last year I held three convenings. One was in New Orleans that brought together folks from Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. The other in Detroit that brought together folks from Michigan and Ohio. And then a convening in DC that brought together the usual suspects in DC, but also some key partners nationally that may not have been included in the other two convenings. What I'd like to say is I would have loved to have had more convenings. Unfortunately, we had enough funding to only do three this past year. We're going to seek funding, additional funding, to be able to pull other groups of folks together and to go back and support the coalitions that have begun to develop in the states that we've just visited. Diverse participants, I just talked about who was in the room. What was very interesting to us was that people working in same states didn't know each other, organizations. And what was even more interesting, that people even in the same cities didn't know each other. That there were folks working specifically on, I don't know, African American health that didn't know that they had a statewide primary care association. That primary care association may not have known that there was a statewide CHW network in some instances. So we really worked hard to make sure that everybody was connected. The other part of the convenings were really to give people concrete information about what's in the Affordable Care Act. What I will say is our timing was perfect. Our first convening held in DC in March was literally 2 days after the bill was signed into law. So we scrambled very quickly to make sure that we had up-to-date concrete information to give to folks and that we were able to share what the provisions were in the law that specifically focused on health equity and how people could be engaged as these things rolled out and implementation was taking place. And we offered tools to impact implementation, such as a policy menu that really lined out, outlined rather, some key efforts that people could pull together, come together in coalitions to impact policy. We've also developed, and I'm going to encourage folks to go to our website because we have lots of information on our website, which is www.communitycatalyst.org, but all kinds of tools around implementation, such as a timeline. You know, when do things have to roll out? You know, the six-month anniversary, we wanted to make sure that folks knew that children up to the age of 26 could continue to be on their parents' coverage. So tools like that are available on our website. We also wanted to make sure that there were opportunities for state-based coalitions. We brought together folks from different states, but we know the work really has to happen at home, on the ground, and while it's important to network outside of your backyard, we need to make sure that there are opportunities for folks both at home and more broadly to work in coalition. The other thing that was very important was to make sure that folks, you know, as I said, didn't know each other from cities and states, but also neighboring states. Sometimes neighboring states have done wonderful things around promoting health equity, engaging communities, and we wanted to make sure that, these convenings offered the opportunity to begin to foster those relationships as well. And here's the other piece. You know, as an organization, we may bring a lot of policy expertise to the table, but we're not the experts. We're not the local experts. And so it was really important for us to really assist the local experts to develop enhanced policy skills so that they're the folks that are really making change in their communities and states and promoting equity and social justice. And we also included a workshop on structural racism. Because again, if we're talking about promoting health equity, we've got to talk about some of the root causes. How did we get here? And so we worked with a wonderful organization in New York, the Center for Social Inclusion, and they do a wonderful, wonderful workshop on structural racism, which really opened up lots of discussion and how do we engage people on the ground and in communities as we move forward. And, you know, and again, I think we heard it during the opening session for APHA. Oftentimes, people don't want to say the word, but you know, it's a fact. And what can we do to change that? And in order to do that, we have to be able to talk about it. And so I would just want to share some of the things that folks in their evaluations said that CHWs offered to these convenings. In many cases, they knew CHWs existed. And in some states, they were called different things, promotoras or community health advisors, but they had never connected with them at all. And so it was wonderful to be able to connect with community health workers. They also shared with me that they never would have gotten as much community insight and perspective without having those community health workers in the room adding to the discussion. And then it was really important to have direct connections to communities most affected by health disparities. And people were saying, you know, geez, we have this wonderful clinic and we see people and they come in, but we're not often able to have the conversations that we were able to have with the CHWs as part of these convenings. And so one of the things that also came out of the convenings were people really wanted to know, how could they support CHWs? In fact, let me just say that one of the small group discussions that happened during these convenings, all they wanted to talk about was CHWs. And of course, that's one of my passions, so I didn't mind adding to that conversation. But people just really wanted to know, how could they support community health workers to really improve health status, eliminate health disparities, promote social justice? And so that was just really exciting. So I want to share some of the ways that we've kind of been able to share with folks to be able to support CHWs in this movement to promote justice. And some of you may already know these things, but I'm going to tell you anyhow. But we really want to see everybody supporting and advocating that CHWs are integrated into healthcare and human service delivery teams, and particularly into the newly created medical homes that are coming out of the ACA. That's a wonderful opportunity to make sure that CHWs are included at the table and that we really have some community involvement. Sustainable funding for CHW programs and initiatives. And I think we're moving along that path, that we're getting more opportunities to possibly create sustainable funding, but we can't sleep. We can't fall asleep at the wheel. We've got to keep after that. We've got to hammer it home. Any local, state, national efforts that are happening to address health disparities, CHWs need to be included. We need to be part of those conversations. And then please, you know, support community health worker organizations. Many states have organizations. If your state does not have an organization, it may be a great time to assist CHWs to come together, to begin to network and have a space to have these conversations. And so I just, in closing, want to talk a little bit about, I talked about some tools that we've offered communities and that are available. Recently, we released a report, A Path Toward Health Equity Strategies to Strengthen Community Advocacy. There are some executive summaries on the in the back table that you can get on your way out. But what I want to say is that organizationally, we've realized that it's wonderful to work with, you know, health, traditional health advocacy organizations, but if we don't assist some of those organizations to really be able to work with communities and assist communities to mobilize and make sure that CBOs and community organizations have what they need to move forward, we're doing everybody a disservice. So the report was released in July of 2010, and it really talks about how funders and traditional healthcare advocates can assist with community-based, community-driven health equity work. Just want to share a little bit about how we got to the conclusions. I want to say the report's available for free on the website that I mentioned, so please, when you go home, take the opportunity to take a look at it. But we looked at CBOs that were either led by or focused on minority issues, minority health issues in six states: California, Massachusetts, Michigan, Mississippi, New Mexico, and Ohio. And we really talked to folks and we wanted to know what was happening in those states. What's already happening? Is there any collaboration happening yet? If there's not, what do they need for these collaborations to begin to happen? And we were particularly interested as an advocacy organization, what policy work were they doing? What policy work did they have the capacity or not have the capacity to do? And we wanted to know about their successes. We want everybody to know the successes that are happening on the community level, but we also wanted to have an open, honest conversation about challenges. And I will share with you, as I said earlier, that, you know, one of the things that we strive to do is to make all these connections for folks. And one of the things that we heard over and over and over was our state health advocacy organizations often are not working with community-based organizations or aren't working to assist us to mobilize communities. I should say that the six states that we focused on those six states because we were already had some connections in those states. The states were very different when you looked at the political climate, some of the resources, what things were already happening in those states. And we understand that that was only six states, but we think that that gives us a nice snapshot. I just talked about that a little bit. And the way that we did this was through online surveys, and we all know that online surveys, not everybody answers. We also did 96 in-depth telephone interviews, and again, that's not every CBO in all of these states, but we believed it was a nice sampling to be able to pull together some information. And you know, again, I just want to acknowledge that 100 telephone interviews in six states does not a, you know, it's a start. It gives us a start. One of the things that we're hoping to do organizationally is to go back to those states and begin talking to additional organizations. We really want to be supportive and helpful to assist communities and CBOs to organize. So I just wanted to give you a couple of the sample recommendations that are in the report. We recommend that resources go to strengthen CBOs. Oftentimes, CBOs are, I've always worked for CBOs until very recently, but are often trying to get by on shoestring budgets. And we know that we need to make sure that they've got the financial capacity as well as the human resources capacity to really do their work and move forward. Getting state advocacy organizations to focus on health equity and promoting health equity. Oftentimes, we found that that's not part of their agendas, even though it really should be. And if we're talking about engaging communities, what's really important to communities? We really want to make sure that there are coalitions built of CBOs, state and national groups, and we want to assist that and nurture that effort. And we know that connections seem to be strengthened from stakeholders. And these recommendations really were developed from the interviews that we did with folks. And so I'm gonna stop here. It just gives you a different, I guess, another perspective on how to really engage communities, some resources needed to do that. And I'll answer any questions. Or maybe we wanna bring everybody up to answer questions, Gail? Whatever is easiest.
Why don't you take some questions first, at least, because I think other people got a chance to answer questions.
Okay, whatever works.
Yeah.
No burning questions. Wow.
Kathy.
Kathy. What was really happening was they were doing a lot of focus, and this is, you know, from the interviews as well as my own experience in my home state, doing a lot of focus on legislative efforts. So then, of course, they're partnering with some of the more traditional folks, you know, who spend the time at the state houses across the country. But then you're leaving out a whole segment of the population that lives in your states. In fact, people were very, very candid with the responses and really very offered lots of great insight as to what their states needed to move forward. And in fact, what we're doing now is going back to those six states and hosting a series of conference calls to bring together those CBOs that we spoke with, as well as those advocacy organizations that we spoke with, to really have some candid conversations and give everybody a safe space to do that. Because we want to really support the collaboration and the coalition building going forward.
I'm going to get an observation.
Sure.
I want to make a note when I was completely aside from it and say it's privately, but I think it would be helpful for the people to hear. And there's a couple of the slides that you're mentioning, I've already in Deanna, no coalitions, state, national, local groups. I would encourage everyone in there to always add tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tribes with a capital T.
Yes.
You say tribal, that's a small thing. But
thank
I say
you.
That because the assumptions are, and this again is my personal perception as well as professional observation where I work within health services, people make the assumption that because tribes have Indian health service that all their health care needs are taken care of, and that is not accurate. I just want to make that observation. We're going to go into lots of details, but we're funding, Congress itself says IHS is funded at 48% of what it actually needs.
That's right, that's right.
And so I don't want people to make assumptions that, tribes, American Indian and Alaska Natives, healthcare needs are taken care of.
Because they're not.
And those same advocacy-based groups should be also be trying to contact the full tribes. And if people need ways of, or need suggestions on how to go about
thank you, Kathy, and I appreciate that. I mean, you know me, I don't mind. I appreciate that you made that comment so that everybody could hear that, and I'll say two things. One is that I'm bad because some of the work that we did do that I did not mention was to push for the reauthorization of, of Indian Health Services, and continue to advocate that resources be increased And that was already on the organization's radar screen before I came, but I think I was able to bring what I know of the CHRs and the work that they do and the work that we've done together with CHRs. So I did not mention that on the slide, but we have done that, some of that work. We've developed a handout about what hasn't happened yet, and that's still part, there's not enough money. And so those points are included in a lot of the information that we're developing.
Any other questions?
Working in Boston, I have done a lot of my work within the University of Massachusetts in Boston, which is a public university with ethnic minority research institutes that partner together. But one of the things that I have found personally very difficult as someone who's worked both in the Latino community and in diverse and immigrant communities, is that a lot of our organizing is both single ethnic and racial community, and then because of grant funding priorities, it's also single health issue focused. And so I just think it's important for us to share strategy, mm-hmm. because it was really clearly between the lines, and I could hear it in the in your project, your CDC Not Health project, that you were kind of translating between the language you reported to NIH about your grant activities and the language for these broader coalition building activities that you're involved with. And I just wanted to put that out there as a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm working in a P20 because we're a smaller research institution. UMass Boston's rising research institution, but it's just been very challenging. We ended up inheriting the Cherishing Our Hearts and Souls Coalition, which is an African-American Roxbury coalition, mm-hmm. but Roxbury is now 60% immigrant, if you count Latino, African descent, and the Asian communities in a particular area. So I just want to share that as a dilemma, and I mean, I think Community Catalyst is kind of an ideal space for working on some of these issues of coalitional collaborations. Because it hurts me, really, in my heart, to have to move through different communities and feel like somehow that doesn't... Actually, at UMass Boston, those things come together because that's where these very diverse communities are studying. That's our four-year research institution. And somebody recently, Courtney Gray from the Boston Public Health Commission the other day, said that he thinks there's going to be a change in the world and UMass Boston is going to be at the center of it. And if it is, I think it's because we have to work in multiracial and multicultural coalitions. We have no choice. That's mm-hmm. our space.
Just a couple of thoughts. One is that I said we're based in Boston, but we do little or no work in our home state of Massachusetts. We leave that to our sister organization, Healthcare for All. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there. And the other thing is that some of the funders, the organization or the funder that funded the health equity work over the past year at Community Catalyst was the Kellogg Foundation. And they have strongly encouraged all of their grantees who are working on equity issues to work together. And so I just say that to say that I think that they're unique in that aspect, because they have encouraged us to work with the forum. And so we're beginning now to reach out to some of the staff members at the forum and figure out how we can do this together. So
I think we have time for one more question.
I think we can squeeze both if we do it
okay.
quick.
I'll take 1 minute. One is for the Asian American region. Right now, New York State is trying to build the statewide SAFEW network, and there was a difficulty in reaching out to Asian Americans. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying hard because I have some connection to the Mohawk. That's one. If you have something to input on that, we would like to entertain because the meeting is on December 6th. Number two, I came from a SAFEW experience in the Philippines, where SAFEW, as I said earlier, is illegal, especially during the dictator Marcos regime, where SAFEW are just being killed or arrested. the thing is that the funding, we look at it as seed money. It's a little inspiration.
That's right.
The truth is, we'll use this funding, or like in our case, we're working on safe W research at the NIH. But this is just a tool to organize the whole bigger community. So, and then let the community fund itself. Like, we make use of other organizations' venues to hold meetings. So, that kind of consciousness we have to develop within us and the community, that the funding is like, it can be for us or against us.
You know, I just want to say that in Massachusetts, our statewide association began with seed money from our State Department of Public Health. So you're right, a lot of these things, you know, just kind of get us started. And then we've got to figure out how to pool our resources together and look for additional resources to move forward. Lee.
I was just going to comment, I guess, in terms of the tribal also, you say about this morning in our program planning meeting, talking about the different boxes we all work in, also the rural burdens of all in terms of just resources and how we approach issues and how we look at the opportunities across those lines as well. And I think when you're doing statewide organizing, we're often tumbling into finding, we think about those urban rural stretches, but I think it's another, you know, piece of that making the broader coalition. And I know we're discovering we have the same NIH funding, which is, you know, very uniquely poised to, I think, be powerful seed money. And I know, sadly, in my least experience of this fund, the 25 that were funded initially, you know, there was some effort to bring them together. There were some minorities and some health disparities center and for CBPR projects, but they have no resources to see to bring us back together, because at least, and I think we could do some thinking about, at least for some of those projects, which a lot of the times CW focus, we could, you know, help with some of this, just being part of that dialogue.
Sure. Are there any more questions or comments at this point? Maybe our speakers will be around for a few more minutes. I want to thank Lourdes and Potri and Lisa Renee for really hanging in there and doing a presentation on Wednesday morning. And I also just want to remind people that there is yet one more CHW section-sponsored session in this room at 10:30. It's called Social Entrepreneurs, CHW Contributions to Health Literacy, Medical Homes, and Health Reform. So if you can, stick around. Yes. Oh, Lisa Renee would like to make a comment.
As the section chair of the CHW section here at APHA, I just want to do a membership plug. If you are not yet a member of the CHW section, please become a member of the CHW section. You can have a dual or actually up to three different affiliations with the association, and you are considered a full member in each one of those. So you can go online and do that. You can stop at the expo. There's a membership booth there under everything APHA. And just thank you again for hanging in.